Okay, welcome along to the Wise Men Say. Hopefully people are still listening, because people tend not to listen when we lose games. So again, like the question of the week thing, I'm probably talking to people who aren't listening, and I don't know why that would never work, but there you go. Joined tonight by writer and author Andy Dawson.
Hello.
Good. You? Enjoying watching Sun at the moment?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, well, we can't say we aren't used to it. We haven't been here before. George Colgan finally joins us from the Times, of course. Been enjoying the football, George?
Just loving life.
Yeah?
Loving life, yeah. Mm. If it's not Sunderland, it's Newcastle. It's perfect. Well, perfect synchronicity.
They picked up a little bit, at least recently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I'm Stephen Gorsuch, joined by Gareth Barker, as always. Okay, dive straight into this tonight, because we are running late. Not that you need to know that. Andy, how do you review the performance? Generally, people think, you know what I mean, some people are encouraged about it. You know, the real optimists saying, had we not gifted Arsenal 2 goals, they could have played all night and they wouldn't have scored, to be fair. So some people say against the Champions League side, that's all right. But then I was going to say the cynic, but perhaps the realist would look at things and say, we're starting to make mistakes now every game.
I think coming off the back of an 8-0 defeat at home against a team like Arsenal, I think it was a triumph, to be honest.
75% improvement, sure.
Yeah, you go into a match like that expecting to lose anyway.
It's disappointing, though, because as Gus keeps saying himself, you know, you expect after a defeat like that, concentration levels would be up, and then obviously 2 goals, well, concentration would be the main thing you're blaming on, really, lack of concentration.
Totally. I think the first 20 minutes or so, I thought we looked all right, and I thought we looked as if we were going to get over what happened the week before. But then, you know, once Wes Brown made that mistake and they got the first goal, then it was always going to be an uphill struggle after that.
The collective sigh and groan around the stadium when he made that pass.
Yeah, because we were all right first 20, 25 minutes, but we weren't great. We weren't creating a lot. And once they had scored, it was always going to be, you know, can we keep the scoreline down? Are we going to get an equaliser? Chances where we weren't, and we didn't. And then the second goal was just a kick in the teeth right at the end.
And there was that decent 20 minutes in the second half as well, with the crowd, you know, a few tackles flew in, a few yellow cards, the crowd got up for it, and it was noisy, and it felt like something might happen then. But I mean, those two errors, I mean, they were as bad as anything at Southampton the week before, weren't they? And that is worrying.
We haven't seen that for a while either, really, have we? I mean, we haven't been, you know, great under Poyet by any stretch of the imagination, but those errors, he did seem to iron that out when he first came, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think there's a problem when if we stroke the ball around at the back like we tend to do, and we're comfortable with playing it back to Maloney, there's always going to be kind of a margin for error. And you know, that happened a few times last season, and it seems to be creeping back in again. Mm. You need to be comfortable on the ball if you're going to play that way, and confidence is just shot at the minute.
I think that's the issue with Brown, isn't it? I think he's just not. He hasn't got the edge of quickness that he used to have, maybe, to get himself out of situations. He's always been casual, and now when he's casual, he gets caught.
There's what he done on Saturday. Yeah.
The thing is, he controlled that first ball pretty well, I thought, and then it's just that thing where he looks like he's changed his mind halfway through it. But I think for both the goals, there's a hangover from what happened at St Mary's, in that decision making in a split second, it's compromised, it's faulty. That's where the doubt creeps in. You try and change your mind. Well, it's the one thing you can't do if you're a keeper or a defender is change your mind halfway through, trying to clear or pass
not,
back or whatever.
Not at that level as the old cliche goes.
Especially when you got like a world-class striker, like, well, a midfielder come striker in Sanchez, just about
great,
2 yards away
from
you.
His anticipation for both was brilliant. I mean, he ran to intercept that ball. He shouldn't have. I mean, he didn't need to do that. He ran to do it, and it was his movement that created the second one as well.
Right, we're going to hear from Gus now on those mistakes.
I try to talk to them. I try to make sure that we go a little bit more simple. I'm trying to make the players understand the position, the ability of the position, when and how. But I think we need to agree that then, unfortunately, when it's individual, when it's a kick, when it's a pass, that we cannot control it. We are not playing PlayStation yet. First, I let them see it and swallow it, if you can say it, and then during the week we will talk about it, and you see the reaction from there, and what he thinks, or why it happened, or it's just an action of football.
The PlayStation reference, he says, yet. I'm not sure what he means by yet.
I think there must be some kind of development due where players are going to be eradicated from the game and managers just control it from the
Gary never brought that in, didn't he, by saying Louise looked like he was being controlled by a kid on the PlayStation.
There's something afoot that we don't know about.
They get to play PlayStation when they get a good result.
Maybe it is
allowed then.
And that's the year. So the punishment is they can't play. But Gareth, I remember after the Crystal Palace game last season, the term you used when I spoke to you about it was a little bit relegation-y, which is a great word because everybody knows what that means. It sums it up. For the first time, I would say, well, no, because we nearly did get relegated last season. That was going to be a stupid thing to say. You know what I mean? But we seem like we're back to there suddenly after looking so solid before Southampton.
I think there's a couple of facets to that, isn't there? I think there's the reaction to the errors from sort of outside the actual football, and then there's the football itself, and it's two games. It's like a microcosm. It's been bad for the last two games, but it wasn't too bad before that, and now there's a situation where everyone's starting to panic because of the magnitude of the defeat and then the manner of the defeat on both occasions, even though we didn't get slaughtered on Saturday. But I think then the reaction from supporters and stuff is understandably negative. The manner of the defeat doesn't help that, and then it sort of snowballs into this crisis situation. I wouldn't say the performance on the pitch against Arsenal was a relegation-y performance. I think they were just missing, you know, quality, which a lot of teams in the Premier League do, and there'll be plenty of teams who, you know, maybe don't make as glaring errors as we did twice in one game at the weekend, but there'll be teams who make mistakes like Sunderland, and I still believe that Sunderland they'll be absolutely fine. But
it's a bit disappointing because Arsenal look so average and so ordinary. Had Arsenal came and Sanchez scored two sort of world class goals, do you think people will be thinking about it differently?
I don't think it's fair.
It's like
to
an
say
opportunity
that.
Missed a little.
I don't
bit
think though. It's fair to say Arsenal were average. I think they had a lot of the ball, and you know they've got really good players. I mean, they're a far better side than Sunderland are, and they ever will be for the foreseeable probably 30 years. So, that's the case,
come on,
isn't
so
it?
But keeps that, us going, man.
But that is the case, and that's where you need to bring perspective into the discussion, I think, and start looking at it. It's not negative. It's not being like, oh, like small time mentality or knowing your place or this sort of like Steve Bruce idea of having high expectations when you should be like have low expectations. It's not about that. It's just about the reality of the situation that's presented on the pitch, and at the moment Sunderland haven't got the, I mean, you look at the bench, as soon as you go a goal down like that, firstly, I mean, Gus is coming under pressure, and you know there is some fair criticism in there, but he's being criticised more for what he's saying than what he's doing on the pitch, to be honest. And then on top of that, he's got the injuries, which, you know, we'll touch on later when they ask him about it. But, you know, he looks at the bench, what's he got? Well, tell you what, I'll bring on Altidor. I'll bring on who? I mean, what can he do to change that? I mean, Wigan, DME. I mean, to be honest, I'd be tempted never to play him ever again because I just don't think he's bothered. Like, he was the first one.
Does it annoy you that he's got the power in the contract?
Yeah, I'd level a criticism at him that he isn't trying. To be honest, on the basis of the last two games, and he's shown no signs of signing that contract. You bring him on and he was weak, and then you bring Altidor on and it's just bizarre because he's one of these players where you think this is the week where it's going to happen, and then he comes on and you think
I'll stop thinking that a long time.
Do people still think that?
then it's like this competition winner appears and starts running into areas where you think what's going on here. Then he plays for America and he's amazing, and then he plays to Sunderland and he's just bizarre. And then, I mean, who else is he going to bring on? I mean, Cabar was on the bench last week. Mavrias is on the bench. He doesn't even seem to get up and have a warm-up. I mean, the default changes.
There's a reason these players aren't playing.
Exactly. You know,
there's a wider thing which Poyet talked about after the match, which is, you know, he I think he said seven players that played against Arsenal at home last season are no longer at the club. You can't keep doing this. Well, the problem is the club keep putting themselves in a position where they do have to do it, so they have no choice but to completely and utterly start again. And it's difficult to gel a team straight away. Now, what you have to hope is that moving forward, by the time next summer comes along, they're not having to do that, and that they're able to bring in one, two, three players who are going to improve the squad. But it feels like we've been saying this since Sunderland came back into the Premier League. It's been 8 years. And you can this is the eighth season, and you can justifiably ask, what is the point of Sunderland being in the Premier League?
I think there is a bit of discontent regarding that, you know, I think that's what exacerbates it. Are you just happy to just, you know, churn over in the Premier League and finish in the bottom eight, or like outside of the top three, but in the bottom eight every season? And then it gets boring, doesn't it? That's the thing, and people want a sign of improvement. You see other teams who've been in the Premier League for 2 minutes, like in the history, and they get in Europe, they get in the cup finals, and we haven't got that. I mean, and then everyone starts getting blamed. It's Short's fault. It's Burns' fault. I mean, in fairness, Ellis Short, he hasn't got a bottomless pit of money. He gave a lot of money to managers before. They've wasted it, essentially.
Well, and he's chased that by then making terrible decisions. If it's De Canio or if it's Defanti or whatever. And now, you know, the hope has to be that Congerton and Poyet are the right two. But you know, I don't think there's going to be kind of a quick answer to that.
Because
it doesn't seem like a marriage made in heaven, does it? Let's be honest.
I think if we have a bit of perspective, I think we've got to look back at the coming forward from the events of 2013. The summer then were horrific. And the fact that we're sitting here talking about the club still being in the Premier League is a bit of a miracle, to be quite honest, because we were in such a mess a year ago when Poyet turned up. You know, we had a completely schizophrenic season last season. We got to Wembley, which was, you know, a nice day out for all that we lost. And I think talk of a crisis again is a bit off, because we had talk of crisis when we lost at Spurs last season and then managed to turn it around.
It's the effect of this 8-0 defeat, isn't it? It's hanging over you. It's hanging
it's
over
overshadowing you. Everything
yeah,
else.
Mentally,
yeah.
And, you know, it's making a difference, isn't it? The way fans think, the way they reflect on things. Because as I said before that game, we looked fine. And obviously, the players are affected by it, because you could say that the confidence is down.
Exactly. Before the Southampton game, we'd lost one in the league all season. We'd drawn against Man United. We'd drawn against Tottenham. You know, decent results. We looked decent at the back. It's just the Southampton thing is just a freak show, really.
But there's also, say Sunderland lost 2-0 at Southampton, then lost 2-0 to Arsenal, but we're in the bottom three. I think there is still that feeling around that, oh, Christ, here we go again. There is that feeling about the club, and that's never really disappeared, or it has done, but for very short period of times. And last season was so traumatic that I think it's understandable that you would get that sinking feeling when you see that happen again.
You've got to get to the bottom of the league, and that's when you start playing, apparently. So maybe that's where we should be aiming for.
A couple of people have mentioned perspective, but football fans having a sense of perspective, that's never going to catch on, I'm afraid. They need to snap out of it though, Gareth, quickly.
It's a funny one to gauge. It's the negativity of that 8-0 that's created the issue, I think. And snapping out of it's one thing, but I think it really is hampered by the situation with the squad being quite thin, and he's losing. Well, he's basically lost his two probably most game-changing players in Jacquarini, and although we didn't see a lot of Alvarez, that's what he's brought in for. And then at the back, you've got the injuries situation there. So, Revier coming in, fair enough.
There's going to be a clamour for that, isn't there? Because people want change, don't they? Now, you mentioned we're going to talk about the attacking options in a little bit. Naturally, Wes Brown's made a huge mistake here. He was equally a fault for the first goal against Southampton as well. We've seen him do this before. Naturally, people want him taken out the firing line because we have a new right back. People don't really know, if they're being honest, much about him, but people are going to want that change instinctively, aren't they?
I think it'd be a fair assessment based on a number of games recently, though. I mean, Wes is a class player, isn't he? But he's just slightly in decline. I mean, he came back. We wrote him off last season. He came back, but this time I think it's a little bit different. And that's not a criticism. I mean, he's 35 and he's had like really bad injury problems, and he's probably done well to stay fit for a long period. Really, based on the situation when he was out for probably 8 months.
Down his age, or
it shouldn't be a physical thing with Wes, though. It should be about concentration and position and knowing what his job is, really.
Which you wouldn't think was down to his age, or
no. And it's it's going to be it's not a straightforward task just throwing somebody in who's not played in the Premier League before.
And he's also almost 35.
And he's also almost 35. And you know, Poyet was asked not long after the window closed about bringing in free transfers, and he made the point, unless it's one of those obvious ones who are available and that people would be, you know, wanting to get, there is a reason why people don't have clubs at this point of the year. Now, I don't know enough about this this fella to sort of denigrate him. I'm certainly not doing that without seeing him play. But, you know, there is that to balance that argument up with.
He's got a good pedigree, though, hasn't he, Revy? I mean, he was at PSG. Sorry, Lyon. He was at Napoli. I know, but, well, he managed to get him. He was always a bit of mystifying, I think, the De Sena situation. It was more of a, oh, he's signed for them. It was more a, sort of situation with De Sena when he signed for people like Liverpool and Napoli. But I think Revier's got a decent pedigree. He's played at a good level all the way through his career. So, I mean, it might turn out to be one of those signings that comes off and it's like, oh, that was a sort of a fluky bit of business, really. But he might be completely out of his depth.
But you don't know how good Billy Jones was, Andy, doesn't it? Because he came in and he changed the dynamic of that back four. He looked great. He got injured straight away. And then I'm not saying this is all down to him not playing, but, you know, certainly an element of it, I think.
Definitely. I mean, it was a big surprise that he came in and he was as good as he was. With regards to Revier, you don't know how much fit he's going to be. He hasn't played since end of last season. As I say, he's 34. There's the whole thing about the pace of the Premier League. If he goes in next week at Crystal Palace, it's going to be a tough game for him as a baptism of fire sort of thing.
Well, he'd be up against Bolasie or Zaha, won't he? Probably. Yeah. So yeah. That's not an easy sort of game.
No one wants that.
No.
God. Very uplifting podcast, isn't it? This is worse than the one after the Southampton. Definitely. I think we were all just starstruck by Julio, weren't we? One area you can't change things around greatly is the attacking areas. Now, if Fletcher's out, then Wickham surely goes back up front. Maybe not unless Gareth Shakley said, not unless
I'd rather give
Gus
Danny
sees
Graham
it like Gareth does
stage.
and then thinks that, would you really?
Definitely.
What, just for the effort thing?
Well,
was that really knocked?
Let's be honest. Well, 4.5. Danny Graham played for Sunderland for 4.5 months and was cast out for whatever reason that was. Remember, De Canio got rid of him. So, you know, I don't know. His terrific judgment of character. So, I don't know. I just think at the moment, I don't think Danny Graham done anything on the pitch to deserve to be as castigated as he has, really. I think it became trendy to slag him off.
He played in a system similar to this at Swansea, too.
It was like he went down on O'Neill's ship, really, didn't he? £5 million. Nobody was really twisting when we signed him. Everyone came round to the idea. And he struggled in a team that was really struggling at the time. So I think if you look at his record and you look at Wickham's record, he scored twice as many Premier League goals as Conor Wickham. He's in 3.5 years, he's scored, what, 5 goals?
Is it not like we're saying with the youth players, there must be a reason these players aren't playing? We don't see the training.
I think that's different because like Graham played in the Premier League for a season for Swansea and scored 13 goals. So I'm not saying he's the answer to the long-term problem. I'm just saying, I mean, if Gus is saying the squad's thin, then you've got to consider the options that are in the squad outside of the players that are failing regularly. And to be honest, aside from the Stoke game, you look at Fletcher and you look at Wickham and they haven't been at it for the entire season. So, and then you bring out the door in the equation and then you cry yourself to sleep at night. So, why not Danny Graham? I'm just saying, I mean,
y'all know me, the positive one who's talking me around.
I'm just saying that as a collective three. And I mean, Fletcher might be injured. So, I mean, Graham's going to have to come back into the reckoning in some capacity unless he's going to go with just out the door.
Did I hear somebody say he was going out on loan?
I heard the word Brentford being mentioned. Yeah,
he probably will. So he's probably gone now and during this conversation. So, I mean, isn't that bizarre? I mean, why would you weaken your squad further? I mean, I know Roberge wasn't a world beater, but we let him go. I mean, we're thin at the back. We're letting players go out on loan and we haven't got any players left. I mean, you're given no squad number for Cabral and then you let Roberge go and potentially Graham go have been in match day squads, and then I don't know who you're replacing them with. It doesn't seem to make logical sense to me.
We mentioned earlier on, George, how the bench doesn't look strong suddenly. That was something we were praising early on the season. I'm thinking specifically players like Jacarini and Alvarez, players who, when you're missing a little bit of a spark, you could possibly turn to, and it must be frustrating that he doesn't have that.
Well, I mean, because those two are really the players who offer variation, really, aren't they? And you would want, the other creative players, nominally people like Johnson or whatever, to A, have that competition, and B, have replacements if they're not playing well. And, you know, it's the sort of Adam, not wishing to change the subject here because I don't mean to, but this, the kind of Adam Johnson equation is one that kind of fascinates us. There's that he was brought to be a game changer for the, not just for the team but for the whole club. It seems that when Sunderland do this, it doesn't happen now.
It's a mystery.
Well, we've, you know, there's obviously, you know, Rodwell was the, who I'm sure we'll come on to talk about, but was the summer signature signing. He's the one that, you know, the club were pushing him. He's a future England captain. We've got him. We can get players like this. We're not going to buy many of them this summer, but this is where we're going. This is the idea of it, and it's just not happening. I completely changed the subject.
No, that's fine. I want to talk about the next one when we come back. First, we'll hear Gareth ask us about the lack of attacking options.
There's a lot of talk about injuries at the back last week, but it's starting to sort of take its toll, the injuries in the forward areas when you haven't got those game changes in Alvarez and Jaccarini to bring on, and then you've got to reshift stuff, yeah, especially when you've got a good period in the second half when you could bring those in.
Look, I thank you for the question, but I think he knows me well. Injuries is part of football. And you need, if you start the season thinking you're going to have your 23, 25 minute squad all the time, you're very naive. That you're going to be lucky to lose three subs and no three starters, you're very naive. That's part of the game, and that's what the squad needs to be, well balanced with the right numbers, with the right quality to cope with that. And if we don't, then we made a mistake, and that was going to be seen in the next few games.
Gareth, on media duty for Sunderland, I want to talk about that Rodwell point you made then, George, because it kind of links to what Gus was saying now. We're talking about which players you bring in. He's just said himself, you need the right balance. Now, we've had this debate previously, and I'm going to open it back up. We've all agreed it's a long-term project, as you've just said as well. Five-year deal, patience, a level of patience is required, I think. However, I've put it to people before, can a club like Sunderland make an investment, you know, blow practically all their entire transfer budget on potential? Are Sunderland in a position to do that? Does Sunderland need to spend £10 million on a player who's going to come in and improve the team straight away?
Mr. Wickham?
Yeah, but that's before. I'm talking about the summer.
Well, I don't think they thought they were buying potential. I think they thought they were buying a ready-made player, yeah, who's still young and who's been, you know, who's had fitness problems, or, you know, a bit of fitness problems, hasn't been picked, but that, you know, he was an England international, played a year before Brazil, didn't he? And, you know, so it's not like he's a raw talent. I don't think that's what they thought. I thought they were buying, you know, I think they thought they were buying someone who could go on and captain England. Now, yeah, he still might do, but he certainly hasn't had the impact that they wanted and the team needed. You know, and I absolutely take the point about buying the one player and leaving the rest of the squad to, you know, to be built on scraps, as it were. It's a very difficult position that Lee Congerton's been in that he's had very little money to spend, and he's had to kind of completely restock it. It's not quite starting from scratch, but it's not far from it. Now, whether he's done a good job or not, you know, time will tell on that. But, you know, what he has said is that it's not just about one window, it's about two windows, it's about three windows, it's about four windows, and then at the end of that, hopefully the squad's in a position where there are assets, where their age is good, where you've got good players, and you can start the process of, you know, being self-sufficient. There's very few assets in that squad who are worth more, yeah, than what they signed for, if any.
Have you changed your stance on Rodwell, Gareth?
I just think you've got to keep playing him. You just got to keep playing him.
Is he the
right
player? This is not a personal attack on him.
No, I just
think... He's a decent player. Is he what we need?
I think he's struggling in the area he's playing, and in that top of the midfield triangle. I'd be tempted to play him deeper to get him on the ball more, because he spends so much of his time chasing after stuff and not getting there. I just think in that position, when we don't have a lot of the ball on the opposition half, he's sort of a bit wasted because he's not picking it up. And I think he's a good carrier of the ball. We saw that down at Burnley. He started to do some good stuff before he went off. And if he gets the ball in deeper areas, he's going to be on it more. I wouldn't be adverse to maybe doing that. But
should the recruitment team not have known?
But it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? I mean, again, he's had, what, 9 games for the club? 5-year deal, like you say. If they sign a player who's better than Rodwell on loan and spend that money elsewhere, they might have wasted that money elsewhere. To buy two players for that money, or, well, they haven't spent the budget, or, you know, they've tried to penny pinch again and they're trying to spread that large amount of money among too many players, and then we've got another good player on loan who's going to come and do well and then leave at the end of the season. You can't win. They've tried to buy a player like you were saying, George has got this, you know, potential to play for England long term. I wouldn't say, you know, England captain, but definitely potential to play for England long term. And you know, he's there for 5 years. So what do you want?
Just a question, Andy, I have is, he signed Liam Bridcutt to play a certain role. Now, I'm not sure he would have done that had he knew Cattermole was going to sort of turn his form around and produce the kind of form he's producing now. But it adds to a problem, doesn't it, where fans look at this player, Bridcutt, sitting on the bench and think, well, he isn't an impact player, he isn't going to come on and change a game. And Rodwell is now sort of in a similar bracket. He's under a similar sort of umbrella as that. And, you know, it just begs the question, should they have done more to try and find a player with more purpose, maybe? Jonjoe Shelvey would be perfect for that midfield.
Yeah, possibly. I think with Rodwell, I think we need to give him time because he's hardly played in the last 2 years. You know, he's probably forgotten how to play football to some extent. It's going to take a few months for him to get back into the swing of it. But like you said, we could have gone out and we could have bought a £5 million midfielder and a £5 million striker that wouldn't have fit the bill, wouldn't have been good enough, and would be like you say, accusing the club of penny pinching again. But I think Rodwell's got enough potential to be, you know, the kind of player you can build a team around. Mm. But it does need time.
I agree, and I haven't, you know, sort of brought this up to try and I don't want people to think I'm needlessly criticising Rodwell, because I'm not. I just think if we were sitting mid table and these results weren't happening, you would be more inclined to say, okay, just give him a little bit of time. But you need players to start leading by example now on the pitch, don't you?
The 2 points from mid table, that's a ridiculous thing. Mm-hmm. And a Van Aanholt shot that hits the inside of the post and comes out against Burnley, or hits the inside of the post and goes in against Burnley, is a difference between being 13th and being bottom three. That's the stage of the season you're at. I just don't think there's any need there. Sort of rip it up and
did
start.
You hear the bit
again
when I said football fans don't have perspective? Though.
Yeah, but on the subject of Bridcutt, though, I mean, I feel a bit sorry for him in a way, because I think at the time I could understand why Gus brought him in, and now it's progressed so quickly in 6 months, maybe to the stage where he's not the kind of player who we need at all.
I wouldn't be surprised to see him go in January, to be honest.
If we could get sort of fee from, how much would you get from 2 million quid?
You'd look for the same. Back was 2.5. Was that paid for?
Can't remember. Yeah, something like that. I mean, how much?
Victim of circumstance, Liam Bridcutt, isn't he? It's a shame in a way, but it's just the way things are at the moment, isn't it? He's not going to get close to that side, is he?
Well, should we be letting players go because of the injury crisis?
Exactly.
Well, Cattermole's on 4 yellow cards as well, isn't he?
So. And on Rodwell, how much did he cost?
Ten rising. Ten.
And how much did Sunderland spend in the summer? 14-ish.
Yeah, Van Aanholt, so, perhaps.
I mean, so the point is, I mean, he was the one. So, I mean, he was the one that they invested in. He was the one that they said, this is the statement. And so it's very disappointing that he's not done what they wanted him to. And I think it stands out.
That's out because of it. Sort of,
and you also think, you know, who else did they want who didn't want to come? There would have been, I bet you there was players, apart, I mean, obviously the B word, who would try and get through a week without mentioning.
I don't think we mentioned him in a couple of weeks.
I think there may have been other players in the mix that they wanted that they couldn't get. You don't know.
Lack of attack and drive from the midfield. Starting to put more pressure on the wingers. Are they delivering? What do you think about Buckley? He seems to be, you use the term, the Marmite player thing. I'll be honest, views are very polarising from people I speak to. People I ever, like you say, I love him or hate him.
Yeah, I thought he played all right at the weekend. I thought he was probably our biggest threat. But you speak to South Sport somebody else after the game, they were saying he was absolutely garbage. So I guess it depends.
Well, people I was sitting next to at the game on Saturday, Andy, one on the left of me thought he had a great game. One on the right of me thought he had a shocker. That's genuine as well. So where are you with it?
There you are, the Marmite player, isn't he? I'm not that against him, really. I think he gets forward, he gets involved. He can win free kicks in and around the box. He looks like he plays with some purpose. I've definitely seen worse players playing in that position for us. Pound for pound, I think he's better than Johnson, because for me, Johnson has only ever delivered kind of 75% of what you want from him consistency wise. Buckley.
It's part of the midfield situation.
Interestingly, I love Marmite, but I don't have a strong opinion on Will Buckley.
Yeah. I think,
just what you said there, though, we do need a bit more penetration from the centre of midfield. We need someone who's going to get in the box and get on the end of things.
But that has not going to affect happening all over, because even, I mean, we keep saying the likes of Johnson would be dangerous when they receive the ball high up the field, and we just don't have the drive, for those players to receive the ball high up the field. That's the way it seems at the minute. Again, that might be down to confidence.
But they did it at Swansea, against Swansea. They did it against Stoke. And then international break. And then you come back and do what they did.
So could we blame Roy Hodgson for this as well?
Yeah, I think it's probably... Well, not just Roy Hodgson, every international manager in the world.
Sepp Blatter. We'll just blame Sepp Blatter for everything.
I kind of want Andy to start listing some of those wingers who were saying that are worse. Sam Mason and people like that.
God, how long have you got?
Terry Cook.
Yeah.
Peter Beagrie was good, wasn't he, in the four games he played? I was only about 10 or 11, I think, when he played.
We've had loads of rubbish players in numerous positions. It would be unfair to try and pick the worst one of them.
It would be unfair to single 20 or 30.
It would be.
Question of the week next week, list some rubbish wingers who's played for Swansea.
Yeah, I'm trying to... Kevin Hooper, was it? Remember? Like, you never barely kicked the ball. Remember, got him on loan from Wolves?
I don't even know.
Under Mick McCarthy, got him on loan. I think he was a Cardiff.
I can't remember much of the Mick McCarthy era because I was drunk. Just trying to block it all out, I'm afraid. It didn't do it for me, Mick.
I don't think he listens, I think he is.
Right. I kind of want to end on a positive if we can, because this has been the most downbeat podcast I think we've ever had. Van Aanholt was good again, Andy.
He was, yeah.
Find of the season so far.
So far, along with Billy Jones, I think. But it's good to see fullbacks that can get forward and do stuff.
It's just good to see fullbacks.
It's good, yeah. It's good to see
left back,
fullback get across the halfway line. Yeah, he has been. He's been good. I'm trying to be more optimistic than I seem like I am, because we're not that far off and we're not doing that badly. It's just the whole 8-0 thing is just hanging over everyone's heads. And if we go to Crystal Palace next week and win 2-0, everyone will be happy again.
Wondering what all the fuss was about.
Yeah.
You been impressed with Van Aanholt, George?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. Obviously, he wasn't first choice for the position. Alonso did really well last season. I'm sure a lot of people would have been sort of disappointed he didn't come back, but for the price he was, he's been an absolute snip. And that's that we were talking before about the model, about what they're having to try to do. Then that's a good example of it working so far. Obviously,
and he's another one who can possibly get better once he gets some games under his belt as well, Rodwell.
I mean, in the two full-backs as well, I mean, there's going to be concerns over Jones. I mean, he came with the injury-prone tag, and he's been injured relatively long-term twice since he's been here. So, I mean, that's not a really great start. And the medical team, to be fair to them, have, under Poyet, we haven't had very many injuries until the last sort of few months. So maybe that eventually they can get him right. But they've got two players of a good age. They're not the mid-20s, so I mean, and they're on permanent deals, so that's not bad.
Can remember when Niall Quinn said no storm was going to go unturned regarding why all the Sunderland players were getting injured, and then didn't they conclude that one physio had to speak to another physio directly or something, and that was what I came up with.
That was like the massive shake-up.
Like, can you remember when Peter Reid appointed Adrian Heath as first team coach because he'd played in Spain in the Spanish Division 2 for a year or something, and we were getting all these ridiculous quotes about how they like to keep the ball in Spain, and that was ridiculous.
Ahead of his time there, then, wasn't he?
Well, Spanish football wasn't what I think was said attempted because
best
we
way
went
to keep
down
the, keep the ball that season was to keep kicking off. We had the ball in the centre spot a lot. That was strange. We can go, but this is good, isn't it? Look how bad it is now. It isn't that bad. But remember when it was really bad then? Let's talk about that.
Might make yourself feel better, right? Yeah. Well, we can't, before we finish, we can't really ignore the Mannoni situation. Gus said, George, in the press conference last week, I don't like to drop goalkeepers after a bad game. Is he made for a rod for his own back there? Or
what he actually said, sorry, was I don't drop keepers after one bad game.
Yeah, exactly.
Two.
So
he said two bad games.
Did he?
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a very delicate one.
I think
one.
Someone's mistyped that because I was there when he said it.
I mean, Mannoni did great last season. By all accounts, he's a kind of quite sensitive character. I think he was, not surprised, but when they brought in Pantilimon, I think they had to handle that kind of quite carefully with him. And if he does get taken out, then that could have a big effect on his confidence. However, you have to say also that it might be getting to the point where it's the kindest thing to do. And if they brought someone in from Man City and brought him in effectively to challenge him, then
well, he's within his rights to call the manager now and say, you know, you've brought me in to challenge, I should be playing now.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, I think that's fair enough. I think there does need to, I think for me, the Southampton thing, however you look at it, the worrying thing for me is that there's a loss of momentum. Now, at the start of the season, I think there was a bit of that, and it's important somewhere, somehow, to try and get that back, and I think there does need to be a change. I mean, there aren't many changes available to Gus in the squad, but that is one.
Okay.
I'd keep him in.
Would you?
I would keep him in as well, because I think that the blame for that mistake on Saturday was as much Buckley's as it was his. I don't think he was expecting the ball to be passed back
pass.
To him.
No, it was a dreadful pass.
So deep into the penalty area.
But it was
75-25 for the keeper personally.
It was the same thing with Brown. He had a split. He changed his mind. I mean, or he just got stuck under him. I don't know which one of the two. But the first thing you do is you just have to try and get rid of it. I mean, it was I agree. I think it was a dreadful pass, a proper hospital pass. But there was a synapse missing in that decision making process, same with Brown.
I mean, Buckley gets back to defend there and then he goes and does that. He's probably thinking, oh, I've done well there, I've gone in the... oh no,
it's like what we said to Michael Proctor last week about his own goals, getting back in the box to defend and the ball bouncing off him flying in. Right, okay, we're going to stop depressing people now and we're going to come back and do the question of the week.
Okay, so the question of the week this week, we had Prize Courtesy Game Washington. They very kindly donated a copy of FIFA 15 on the Xbox One.
George and Andy, you need to listen to this because you're going to help us pick a winner.
Yeah, so I sort of tried to narrow the answers down to the best ones. The rules were, by the way, that we aren't going to contact you if you've won. You've got to be listening to win. We're not just going to give copies of FIFA 15 willy-nilly, right? Secondly, you've got to be following us on Twitter. And thirdly, you have to be following Game Washington. So once I've drawn the winner, or the winner's been decided, I might even check, because I'm on Twitter to see if you're following. And if you haven't, sod you. So the answers, Chris Dixon suggested Sean Cunningham, the player Jordan Henderson could have been. Tom Wilcock suggested Cabral, just to prove he's still alive, even though he was on the bench last week. David Druid said Wes Brown, because his defending yesterday on Saturday was like mine on FIFA when my controller runs out of battery. Mark Triggs,
it's keeping in line with
the theme. Yeah. Mark Triggs said Super Kev on the box, Guy Gillian Gaty commentating, and Sean Thornton with the tunes. Neil Morgan, only the high cheekbones and blonde locks of Sebastian Bengt Ulf Larsson are worthy of being on the cover. Difficult to argue with that. Graham Mooney said pretty sure the entire first team from the Southampton game are on the box for FIFA 08. Good effort though, I enjoyed that sadistically. Michael Arkley says Lee Catamol, just, well, he said because of the waist high shorts, but you know, there isn't really the reason not to have him on the box.
Why would that make you go on the box?
Just, I don't know.
Or is that just qualify you for anything?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Right.
Jamie H said Danny Graham, he's been in our books and done nothing for so long, he might as well feature on games or maybe do something with his spare time. So there were the answers, not on Facebook.
Was there not?
Pathetic. On your behalf. Twitter is better than Facebook, to be fair, isn't it? Let's be honest.
For stuff like this, generally, yeah.
Yeah, just generally, though.
Yeah, I would agree with that, yeah.
Yeah.
Any standout?
So, yeah, that's one in the eye for Facebook.
For me, I would probably go with the Seb Larsson one for the aesthetic point of view. If you want people to buy the game, get someone beautiful on the front.
And it was impressive that he put his middle names in. Are those his middle names?
Apparently, I hope so. I hope it's not some Swedish swearing.
For me, I would have Milton Nunes on there because he could have a life-size version of.
That's good, Andy, but you can't win, I'm afraid.
I don't follow Game Washington, so. I've already got the game, so.
Immediately disqualified.
Yeah. Any you're thinking of, George?
No, I'm happy to go along with the majority.
Gareth's going to smile because he loves Larson. Anyway,
well, I like the Larson one. I like the Wes Brown one. I quite like the Wes Brown one. It was clever.
The FIFA con.
Yeah, the controller dying. But if everyone's going to go with.
Nah, I said I probably would have went for that one, actually, just to like mix things up a little bit.
If everyone's going to go with Seb, then who am I?
I just said I probably would have went with the Wes Brown one and mix things up a bit.
So we've got.
So I'm just trying to dramatise things so you can have the deciding vote.
It's right. Like the X Factor.
Yes,
it goes to
deadlock if you decide.
Well, it's like X Factor without the massive twatishness.
And now I'm going to have to edit that out.
That'd be fine.
Yeah, so. yeah.
It's not true anyway, because Gareth's here. Sorry.
Anyway, yeah. Yeah, you don't win anything. I think they should give it to David Druid, because I like the reference to the actual game itself within the answer, and it was topical. Anyone can say Seb Larson.
Anyone can say Lee Cattermole wears really
exactly,
nice shorts.
Exactly, he's thought about that, he's constructed it, and I enjoy it. So
I'm gonna go for Lee Cattermole's high shorts just to really mess things up.
Well, we that's
well, actually,
ideal.
That doesn't
that's
mess things up. Yeah, it makes it easier because it means it's 2-1-1 on different things.
Yeah, so you know, clearly a Facebook user.
Stitch up.
So anyway, so yes, stitch up. David Druitt, you've won the game, so I hope you are following us and following Game Watch.
Getting an unfollow from Neil Morgan now, I think.
Yeah, so, well, you know, maybe. I think we might be, I don't know yet, but we might be doing a Pro Evo thing with Game Washington, so keep an eye out for that. It's very good this year, actually, if you're into that sort of thing. So, that's it.
Okay, well, you can turn off now if you don't like the flat. Remember, that's the drill now. We'll put it right at the end. I'd like to thank my guests for coming on, George Colgan and Andy Dawson. Gareth as well, as always. He's not really one of those. Right, thanks for listening.
One of those. Over out. Last week on The Flat, an over-enthusiastic Niall Quinn was too much for Alan and Steve and lasted just days. Now, not only are they struggling to find a flatmate, but they're struggling at their respective football clubs. With Newcastle United and Hull City battling relegation, the boys decide that they may as well kill two birds with one stone. The team from the Football League show might provide a long-term solution, both on and off the pitch.
Welcome to the Football League show Flat Hunt Edition, with me, Manish Bisin, and as always, Steve Claridge. Say hello, Steve. Tonight we're down on the quayside in Newcastle, in what proves to be a fantastic flat hunt. 3 blocks, 3 lifts, 5 bin rooms, 157 apartments across 8 floors means this week's show is unmissable. And of course, up at the prospective flat, we have Clem. Clem.
Well, Manish, here I am outside the flat of Newcastle United's Alan Pardew and Hull City's Steve Bruce, who have been living together for approximately a month. We'll be going inside the flat to find out about Steve's unusual pie storage formations and why Alan lies in his bed upside down.
Thanks, Clem. Any early thoughts, Steve?
The Football League show team head up to the flat to begin discussions with Alan and Steve.
Clem, Steve, Manish, come in. Make yourselves at home. You'll always be welcome in our place. We're not the type to hound guests out, that's for sure.
What a great flat. 3 bedrooms, 1 bathroom, 1 ensuite, 3 reception rooms, and of course, as always, I'd be delighted to be joined in my room by Steve Claridge. We'll happily share the bed.
And I'm over here on the sofa with Alan Pardew. Now, Alan, this is where I'll be staying. I've heard you're quite partial to a night on the sofa yourself. Why don't you tell me all about that?
Well, sometimes the bed can be a bit uncomfortable. You know, I won't get a proper night's sleep, then I'm tired and straggling for the next day. Sometimes, if you have a bad night on the Thursday, then I'll be straggling to recover on the Sunday. I've even suffered a couple of injuries from the bed. I was struggling with a calf, I had a back and a neck 1 week, and I wasn't available for the weekend. And I can afford a better bed, sometimes I have to go with a sofa.
Well, I hope I won't be disturbed by you in the night, Alan. This is my domain, unless you're partial to a snuggle.
That's great banter, Clem, you know. Exactly what we've been looking for. You've lifted the place already, that's for sure. I think this is going to be the ideal arrangement, absolutely.
Steve Bruce is naturally delighted with the situation, as it gives him the chance to indulge in his greatest weakness, aside from sausage rolls.
Well, Steve, I'm so pleased you've chosen to come up to the flat with for a chat. You're looking well. You're a strong boy, and I could do with a lad of your stature and experience to accompany the other boys up front, that's for sure. I think you'd really work with the other 11 or 12 strikers we've got on our books, especially Nikita and Shane. Absolutely. And now you boys are moving in, it frees up a bit of cash, you know. So I'd like to offer you a hefty signing-on fee for your services and a 6-year deal at about 50 grand a week.
Oh,
okay, well, Maybe you'd like to sleep on it and we'll talk in the morning. You'd be an outstanding addition to the squad, no doubt about it.
Although we didn't think it was possible, an even more confused Claridge heads to bed and mull over Steve's offer. The lads bed down for the evening, but Alan is in for a difficult night. Whoa, what's that noise? I'm going to be tired and straggling in the morning without a proper sleep. Is that a ghost?
Oh no!
Last thing I need is a haunting on top of everything else. I'm going to be straggling tomorrow. I'm going to have to bring in some sort of paranormal expert on a budget. The Akoras of this world are just too expensive. I'm calling Graham Carr in the morning. Until then, I'll have to sort it myself. Hello? Is there anybody there? It appears the noises are coming from the bathroom. Alan goes to investigate. Who's in there? I'm coming in. It's you. Can you shut your noise, you stupid old striker? I'm trying to get some kip. I'll be struggling and tired tomorrow, and I might end up natting someone. I can't have that again. Not after last time. After Alan's misunderstanding with Claridge, he's having doubts about the Football League show team's future in the flat. Although the incident was not paranormal, it was ultimately more disturbing than anything of that nature. With no sofa to sleep on, and the image of the former Leicester striker, trousers around his ankles, fog roll in hand, wailing on that toilet forever emblazoned in his memory, it would be unlikely that Alan would ever sleep again. But as it turns out, he may not have to make the decision himself.
Well, what a great flat visit that was. 2 meals, 3 bathroom visits, 1 shower, and 8 hours sleep. I'd like to thank Steve Claridge again for joining me as always. Clem, where will we be next week?
Well, next week I'll be spending the night on a Zed bed at Stan Turden's house, and he'll be telling me all about his world-famous mustard and matchstick collection.
Whoa, boys, what's going on here? I thought we'd found the perfect match. I can't believe you're going to stab me in the back already. Absolutely.
We'll see you on the Football League show, Flat Hunt, next week. Bye for now.
Well, I don't believe it. Not even a word of thanks from the lads. Let's be honest, I'd expect better. But, after the way I've been treated in my career, hounded out and whatnot, it leaves a bitter taste. We've got our backsides kicked once again. We're just desperate for a bit of luck, that's for sure. Alan, you're a burly. They've only done a runner. Unbelievable.
Out of the way, Steve. I've got my sofa back.
It sticks in the throat like a stale pasty. Disgraceful.
Shut your noise. I'm tired.
Charming, that. Kick me when I'm down, why don't you? It's not new to me, let me tell you that. Absolutely.
Will Steve and Alan ever find the balance that they're looking for? Either way, it looks as though their days on the quayside are numbered. Is the Geordie dream about to die? Find out next week on The Flat.